All right, hello everyone, and welcome to Strictly Hoop Talk. As always, I'm your host, Chris Platty. Hope everyone is doing well. I'm a little bit under the weather myself, so if you hear bottles crunching and all that stuff, that's just water bottles that I'm throwing back because my throat is sore, my nose is runny, but I'm very excited because we have a special guest today, a returning guest, my man Aaron Johnson. Aaron, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Chris. Thanks for having me on the show.
No problem, man. No problem. You're always a welcome guest here. Always value your input. So today's episode is going to be a fun one. We're just going to dive in on both of the series. One, obviously, concluding last night, Golden State and Portland, and the other still going, which is Milwaukee and Toronto. Aaron, do you have a preference on which one you'd rather start?
No, it doesn't matter to me, man. I'm cool with talking whichever.
All right, man. Well, then let's jump into the one that ended last night. I guess we'll go a little bit chronologically here. So last night, the Warriors beat Portland to finish off the sweep. And what will be written in history as a sweep, but I feel was a pretty competitive series despite that, right? Like three of the four games were
absolutely
pretty close all the way through. Last night's game going to overtime had a lot of thrilling dramatics. I mean, who expected, Aaron, a 25-point half from Myers Leonard?
He was having the game of his life. He was making good on that huge contract he signed in the 2016 offseason. He earned all his money right there.
All in just one half. Must be nice for 24 minutes of basketball to earn your entire salary. But he did it, man. That was really a trip to see. That was basically everybody's pipe dream of what Myers Leonard could be. Manifested itself in the half last night. Dame was kind of, again, Dame had a really good game last night, I felt, but he also just seemed to be a little bit fatigued.
Yeah, definitely down the stretch too. I mean, he didn't have a bad shooting night. 11 of 24, that's just under 50%, but you could tell late in the game he just didn't have the lift on his shot to put it in the basket. I mean, he was just tired. And you know, Terry Stotts tried to give him some rest, brought him back in with about 9 minutes left to go in the fourth, and then he had to stay in the rest of the game through overtime just because what can you do without him on the court? And, you know, even with him fatigued, he's still their best player. So it was tough to see, you know, and you know he's playing through that rib injury, but with you have the fatigue mixed with that, it was just a tough combination that unfortunately he couldn't overcome. But when you're playing the best culmination of talent ever, you know, it's kind of tough to do that.
Yeah, it definitely is. And you know, it was really funny you speak on Lillard down the stretch not having the legs. That was something that I observed as well, was you know, we got like three or four Dame time opportunities. You know how he's been hitting all the big shots in the playoffs, but down the stretch he had that step back three that he couldn't get to fall. I think he had two or three potential big time threes in the clutch in the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter in overtime. Then also he had that drive at the end where he did his best Kareem Abdul-Jabbar impersonation with the sky hook. That was pretty interesting. But you know, I would have loved to have seen, for the Portland fan base, I would have loved to have seen them get one last Dame time moment. But yeah, let's talk the Warriors side of it, because the Warriors ended up winning this game. Curry, 37 points. He got 37, 36, and 37 in the series. So he just absolutely dominated. Klay Thompson did not shoot the ball well in this game, but Draymond Green had a triple-double once again. And now Draymond Green and Steph Curry are the only teammates in NBA playoff history to have triple-doubles in the same game, which was an interesting stat to me. But I thought that one of the finals, Kyrie and LeBron had that, but maybe I think that was something like 40 points, right? Like two teammates have 40 points.
Yeah, it was something like that, because they just had the huge game against Golden State, scoring wise. But yeah, no, that was a special performance from Steph and Draymond. And Draymond, playoff Draymond, is honestly just such a joy to watch. I really and I think a lot of people kind of feel the same way. The Warriors are so much more enjoyable to watch without Kevin Durant, because there's, I would put it as, there's a bit of a purity and a bit of an innocence to the team that was able to win before Kevin Durant, and now they're doing it. Now they're playing right now without Kevin Durant, and they're having that success. And Draymond has been awesome, and Steph has, after having a few poor games, a few average games where the critics came out on him, he's, you know, had five straight 30-plus point games, has been an absolute killer, and there's just that joy of watching them. I mean, they even have Andrew Bogut back for this run. So they're playing really good basketball right now, even without Kevin Durant. Draymond has been an absolute terror on both ends. He's hitting some shots. He's obviously a great passer. He's done it all for them. And they're just at a level right now where, even without Kevin Durant, I don't think there's a team in the league that can beat them.
That's very interesting. We'll get to that in a second, but I do want to hop on your Draymond Green bandwagon and praise him. I mean, not bandwagon, that's the wrong term, but hop on that Draymond Green sentiment, because Draymond has been phenomenal. I'm someone who, if you've listened to a podcast throughout the year, it looked like he was a player that was deteriorating, and I thought, okay, these extensive runs and these extensive and deep playoff runs, plus the fact that he is, at the end of the day, a 6'6 guy playing center. So, you know, that's a lot of wear and tear on a body. I just thought that Draymond could never get close to that peak again. But he really switched up his diet, supposedly lost 20 pounds, all of this good stuff. And now he just looks absolutely incredible, man. Like, he is just, he is always, I watch him and he has like 3 to 4 possessions, maybe a quarter even, where it's just like he made the exact perfect read. Like, he is so good at those 2-on-1 scenarios where he's the one defender and he either has to play the shot and the lob, and he always plays it right. I'm blown away by it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many things that he does that don't, you know, it's kind of a cliche, but with Draymond you can really apply it. There's so many things that don't show up in the stat sheet with him, where, you know, he just gets his hands in on a play, he dives for a loose ball, you know, he has that leadership mentality that shows up on the court with his feisty, you know, talk and his feisty play. That what he's doing right now, it has to be noticed, because, and I get it's kind of tough to do that when he has a, not, I wouldn't say poor, but at best an average regular season, you know, where he just isn't really going at 100%. But what he's done in the playoffs has just kind of reminded everyone of what Draymond Green really is and how good he really is. And, you know, when you're a team like Golden State and you have that luxury of being able to kind of coast in the regular season and then your players turn it up in the postseason, you know, that's a luxury that no one else in the league really has, and they show that. And what Draymond has done in these playoffs, it reminds you that, you know, when he's going at, you know, 100%, when he's going at Draymond level, he's a top, you know, 15, 20 player in the league.
Yeah, he's absolutely phenomenal, man. I mean, the way he has stepped up his game is something that is just, it's huge. It can't be understated for the Warriors' success. I mean, if he has more performances like this in the next couple seasons, after presumably Kevin Durant leaves, this Warriors team isn't going anywhere anytime soon. He's been absolutely sensational. Let's, I guess, get that out of the way. That's been a big talking point throughout all of the podcasts that I've listened to throughout the weeks. Is there's the whole narrative of, well, the Warriors are looking great without Kevin Durant, so obviously they're better without Kevin Durant, right? I've always pushed back on that. They're not better. They're just, I think personally, they're more motivated by it, and they play a different style with Kevin Durant, and they do a lot of, Kevin Durant kind of takes away some of their options. Like when Steph Curry and Draymond do their pick and roll, they'll blitz Steph Curry. Well, now they will without Kevin Durant, but when Kevin Durant's on the floor, they don't blitz because then it's either an open three for KD or Klay. But when they blitz Curry when Durant's not playing, that allows Draymond Green to be the short roll man and make all the passes, and just opens up the lobs to Iguodala, Kevon Looney, whoever, and also the corner threes to to Klay, it just opens up so much more for them offensively. So I don't think the Warriors are personally better without Kevin Durant. I just think they're personally more motivated. They've rediscovered a hunger, and they play a different style that I think complements them better. But when you run into a team that's physically imposing, like Milwaukee could potentially be for them in the finals if Milwaukee gets there, then all of a sudden that you need Kevin Durant. Like that the whole reason they lost the 2016 finals was because they didn't have one guy that they could quote unquote break the system and just get them a bucket against anyone in the league, and that's Kevin Durant. So I don't think they're better without Kevin Durant. Where do you stand on this whole notion?
Yeah, we're on the same page here. There's just no reality where you're a better team when what some people would say is the best player in the league is injured for you and is not playing. I mean, I don't think he's the best player in the league. I think Steph's the best player in the league, but he's right there at two or three for me. And there's just no way that the Warriors are better when he's not playing. For all the reasons you mentioned, for being able to break down a defense, for being able to just get a bucket when a team needed a bucket against any sort of defense, Kevin Durant in an echelon of his own when it comes to that, and the Warriors need that. And that's going to be very much needed against Milwaukee. I mean, I still think that they can beat Milwaukee without Kevin Durant, but they'll have a much tougher time, and they won't just run through them like they did Portland. Milwaukee is a very good team, and that's if Milwaukee gets past Toronto. I know we're still going to talk about that series, but against either of those teams, you know, those are two teams that are going to put up probably a better fight because they're healthier than Portland was. You know, Portland missing Yusef Nurkic, and, you know, that's a pretty big loss, but Toronto's healthy. Milwaukee's gotten healthy throughout the postseason with Nikola Mirotic and Malcolm Brogdon coming back. So this is those are two teams that are going to put up probably a better fight. And Kevin Durant, again, just top player in the league, a two-way monster, can get his own shot, an elite three-point shooter, gets to the rim, you know, is an isolation type of scorer, which becomes more important in the playoffs. And those are all things that Golden State benefits from. There's just no reality where having Alphonso McKinney starting few at small forward is better than having Kevin Durant starting few at small forward. I just think that's kind of a bogus assumption and a bogus ideology.
Yeah, man, 100%. You put it up perfectly. Just Alonzo McKinney at small forward instead of Kevin Durant is not make you a better team. It's that simple. Let's jump to the other series then, since we've been kind of tiptoeing around it. So Milwaukee is up 2-1. They're playing tonight for future record. They're playing tonight against Toronto, game 4, after what was a thrilling double overtime game 3. This series has had moments where game 1, Toronto looked like for a majority of the game, looked like they were going to pull it out. Game 3, they were in control most of the game, had a sensational game from guys like Marc Gasol and Pascal Siakam played well. I know everybody's going to kind of rewrite history there with his missed free throws, but overall he played extremely well in that series, or in that game, I should say. And so as a result, Toronto put their best fourth effort and they won by 6 against Milwaukee. Giannis struggled. He had 6 turnovers in the game and only, I'm pulling up the box score right now. I forget. I believe it was 12 points, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, he only had 12 points and 5 of 16 shooting. Like you mentioned, 8 turnovers. He ended up fouling out of the game. So he just really struggled in game 3, and it was kind of like the Raptors, you know, kind of, sort of figured him out a little bit. I don't think you can really do that for a whole series. And there's also going to be games where the Bucks role players and secondary players beat you. I mean, heck, even in game 3, Brogdon had 20, and Brogdon has been outstanding since coming back from injury. Fantastic. He deserves all the credit in the world. But George Hill, I mean, 24 points and 7 rebounds for George Hill off the bench. And that's where, you know, Milwaukee probably wins this game if they get more production from their starting backcourt, where, you know, Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton combined for just 20 points on a combined 6 of 36 from the field. Yeah, I can't do quick math like that, but I mean they were awful, and for Milwaukee to barely lose, it's kind of impressive in its own sense, but Toronto could very well be up in this series 2-1. You go back to that game one where middle of the third quarter, Milwaukee just kind of turned it up a la Golden State, and they ended up winning that game. So this has been a great series, and I don't think it's going to get worse. It's only going to get better as the implications become more serious.
Yeah, man, I don't know where to go with this series. Like, really, I don't. I just haven't had the right feel for Toronto all playoffs. Like, obviously, don't get me wrong, I picked them in Orlando. That was easy. In Philly, after game one, I was like, they are going to absolutely crush Philly. And that series ends up going the total distance all the way to seven. And ends on just a miraculous bounce, four-time bounce shot from Kawhi Leonard, which was unbelievable. And then they come into this game one, and they look like they're going to win. And then Milwaukee storms back. And then game two, Milwaukee blows them out. And you think, okay, Toronto doesn't stand a chance in this series. Or, well, maybe not doesn't stand a chance, but it looks like they clearly have a tough obstacle ahead of them, a tough course to win this series. And yet here they come winning game three. And I know Toronto obviously having 25 from Pascal, 16 from Mark on 5-10 shooting with 12 rebounds and 7 assists. That's as good a game. Playing 44 minutes, Marc Gasol, and playing them all effectively is something I don't know how many times they could duplicate that kind of performance from him. Kyle Lowry looking, he actually looked good early in the series, but last game he struggled in game three. So I don't know what to make of this Toronto team. I still believe in my heart of hearts that this is a Milwaukee series to lose, and that I think they're going to come in game four and they're going to win, just because Toronto has Kawhi, and Kawhi only. It seems like everybody else is just inconsistent. They don't have even Pascal, who's, I guess, their second best player consistently, has not been consistent throughout this playoff run. So it's hard for me to count on a team with Kawhi being your best player and not really having a second player versus a team with Giannis, who's presumably going to win the MVP of the league, and also a much deeper team that has a lot of consistent bench players on it. Like you mentioned, George Hill's been great. Pat Connaughton always gives them solid minutes. Brooke Lopez has been phenomenal. So it's to me, it's hard to imagine Toronto winning this series, even though it is only a 2-1 series.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it on the head when you talked about Kyle Lowry starting the series off well, but kind of has tampered off since. And then you talked about Pascal Siakam being inconsistent in the playoffs. And that's just kind of the generalization of the Raptors. They're just inconsistent as a whole. Kawhi Leonard is the consistent superstar, but really everyone else on the team, on a game-by-game basis, you just don't know what you're going to get from them. I mean, Siakam, Lowry, Gasol, those are all guys that are pretty good players. Gasol's not an all-star level player anymore, but you're talking about a former all-star and then a couple guys that are either all-stars or fringe all-stars. And their production in the playoffs, at least, has been very inconsistent. I mean, even in Game 3, Lowry didn't have a terrible game. I mean, he shot 4-7 from the field, only turned the ball over once, had 5 assists, but he just didn't make a great enough impact. And I think there's a difference between struggling and failing to make a great enough impact, because when he did have the ball and he took the shot, when he took some shots and it was involved in the offense, he looked pretty good. But he just disappears, and he disappears too much, and that's a problem. When you're an all-star level player making max contract money, you know, Siakam had a very nice game. It was like him and Lowry kind of flipped spots for a game, where Siakam, who's been struggling throughout the playoffs, had a nice game, and then Lowry, who's been pretty good since the first round, struggled. So with them, you just never know what you're going to get. And Danny Green has struggled. You know, he's throughout the playoffs, he was 1-9 from the field. They needed a big game from Norm Powell off the bench to win that big, you know, win that big game three. And again, it took guys on Milwaukee struggling. It took Eric Bledsoe and Chris Middleton shooting 6-32 from the field. It took Giannis shooting 5-16 from the field and fouling out and turning the ball over 8 times. It took a lot to go wrong for Milwaukee for Toronto to win. And that's why we're on the same page of this is Milwaukee's series to lose. I predicted this series to go 7 at the beginning, and I picked Milwaukee to win it. I feel very comfortable with that pick right now. I still think it'll go 7. because I think Kawhi Leonard's on another stratosphere right now with the way he's playing. And I think that Toronto can get enough consistent performances. If they can get a couple more good performances from Lowry, from Siakam, they'll be able to steal another game or two. So I think they can get that. I think it'll still go seven. But again, Milwaukee has no business losing this series, even if it goes seven, just because the talent disparity is pretty large, in my opinion, especially when you look at the depth. I mean, you have Malcolm Brogdon coming off the bench, George Hill coming off the bench, and even Hristo Odorizuola has been really good in the playoffs. So there's just too much that Milwaukee has that Toronto cannot counter.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I'm still shocked you see it going seven, but you know, the crazy thing about this playoffs is everything is so fluid. Like if Milwaukee loses this game for tonight to Toronto, all of a sudden it's 2-2. And if Toronto just has a good game, if they play for four quarters like they played in game one in Milwaukee and they pull off a win, then all of a sudden it's 3-2 coming home to Toronto. So like you can really never count a team out. I mean, we've seen that recently in NBA history. And so it's so interesting to see how fast these things change in these series when the stakes are this high. But that being said, I got two questions for you, which is my concern and a reason for me picking Milwaukee like you are in this series. And so the first is, if you were to do a draft, just give me a number. If you were to do a draft of the 10 best players from both these teams, how many of those players are Milwaukee, roughly? Like six, maybe seven?
Yeah, probably right around there. I mean, I think it leans more towards Milwaukee than Toronto. You know, Giannis, Middleton, Bledsoe, Lopez for the series that he's had, Malcolm Brogdon, George Hill, you know, and then Nikola Mirotic and Hristo Odorizuola. It just goes to show how much deeper Milwaukee is than Toronto.
Yeah. And the second question I have, and this was my big reason for why I actually picked the Bucks in five going into this series, was before the series started, I just looked at the matchups. I looked at the way Toronto was playing so inconsistently with their with Kawhi's supporting cast being so inconsistent. I just saw that Kawhi obviously has to guard Giannis, and that was a Game 3 adjustment they made, and Kawhi still played a fantastic game, scoring 36 points for them on a pretty decent shooting. I mean, not the greatest, 11 of 25, but all things considered, 25 shots for Kawhi is better than a lot of shots. You want those shots in Kawhi's hands rather than anyone else on the team. But how long do you think Kawhi can actually guard Giannis for? How many minutes in a game can he actually guard Giannis for? Because that's, to me, it's way too taxing. He has so much to do on offense. I can't imagine him playing more than 5 to 10 minutes guarding Giannis in the game, right?
Yeah, that's the scale that if you're Toronto, you're trying not to tip, but you want to try to maximize. And it's tough because, I mean, Leonard, as we've known him throughout his career, is one of, if not the best defender in the NBA. And when you're going up against one of the most unstoppable forces in the league, you would love to have your best defender being able to guard him throughout the game. But again, that, like you said, that's just too taxing. And you look what Leonard had to do in Game 3, played the most minutes of the team, 52 minutes, took the most shots, you know, took some hits because he went to the free throw line and took 13 free throws. So that's a guy that had to go through a lot, and we know his injury history as well. So you can't put him on Giannis for every single possession they're sharing the court together and expect him to then be able to carry the significant load offensively. So it's a tough scale that you don't want to tip, and I'm not really sure what the correct number would be, but I would say you can only have Kawhi guarding Giannis for, I don't even know. I don't even know how many possessions I could calculate, to be fair. But if Kawhi is able to do it, you obviously do it. But if you start to see some fatigue, if you start to see some tear, then you gotta switch it up. You got to throw Siakam on him. You got to go with someone else. And that's a problem because outside of Siakam and Leonard, there's really not another big wing on Toronto's team that can even try to stop Giannis and at least try to limit him. Everyone else is kind of too small. I mean, I guess you could put maybe a Serge Ibaka on him, but I don't know how well that would work. there's just not a lot of great options past Kawhi and maybe Siakam.
Yeah, Serge playing only 14 minutes in a double overtime game, by the way. That's pretty telling to me.
Yeah, he's been, I mean, he's just kind of been inconsistent. He had a nice game. I can't remember if it was game one or game two where he played pretty well. But then there are other nights, you know, in this path, you know, throughout the playoffs where he's just not been all too good and he's not been all too helpful. And that's a problem for a guy that's making, you know, about $20 million a year. That's a problem. And that's taking up a lot of Toronto's cap space that they could be using again on a wing that is more helpful. And one other thing that I think is interesting, and I think that Nick Nurse should go to more, is he started to play kind of a big three lineup of Siakam, Ibaka, and Gasol, and that's had some positive returns on it. So I'd like to see him go back to that a little bit more. I think there's some value to it just because Siakam's versatile enough to play the three and can shoot and is quick enough to defend threes on the opposing team. And then, you know, it gets Ibaka and Gasol out there for rim protection and interior defense. And then both of them have kind of similar yet contrasting skill sets offensively where I think there's a nice balance to it. So I'd like to see that more too, especially, again, considering Toronto's lack of wing options. When you have to take Kawhi out, that's not a bad front court to roll with.
No, I'm with you 100% because look at Milwaukee's front line anyways. Like it's usually Mirotić and Lopez or Ilyasova's, and those are kind of the three interchangeable bigs with along with Giannis will play big sometimes, but those aren't mobile. Those aren't the ones, those aren't, you know, the Draymond Greens that are going to punish you by virtue of small ball, just fast pace. Those are all players that Marc Gasol can kind of keep up with. I mean, Brook Lopez is probably the most difficult, but you could probably switch the matchups and put Ibaka on Lopez and put Gasol on Ilyasova or Mirotić. I mean, neither Ilyasova nor Mirotić and Lopez, of course, too, are none of them would you would consider mobile bigs. So I like that idea a lot because that's one of the advantages Milwaukee has, and I think that's what makes them such a great rebounding team, is that they can play Giannis at the small forward and they can play him with two bigs, and then they have all of this size, and not to mention the size they have in their backcourt as well. So I agree. I would, if I was Nick Nurse, I would look to that lineup a little bit more for those minutes that Kawhi's not on the floor, because I think that I think Ibaka, even though he's been up and down, I think he's a good enough player to be playing more than 14 minutes in a double overtime game. And number two, I can't see them playing Gasol 44 minutes. So 44 minutes every game and expecting him to maintain throughout that game his efficiency. So,
yeah, I agree with that. Gasol's a guy that he can't be doing that at the mid-30s age that he's at. And he was really good last game, but eventually that's going to tear his body down to the point where by game five, game six, he's either not going to be able to play or he's not going to be of value on the court.
Yeah. All right, give me your prediction for game four tonight. I assume since you're saying it's going seven still that you expect Toronto to win tonight.
Yeah, I think Toronto's got to take this next one at home, you know, even up the series at two apiece. And then, you know, then it gets a little different, you know, for game five. You know, we'll see kind of what happens. I mean, maybe Toronto could go up 3-2. More likely, back at home, Milwaukee's able to win it. But I think Toronto's got to win it tonight if they're going to keep this A series. You don't want to go down 3-1. That's just a really tough spot to be in. So I think Toronto can win this one. Even though they did play their guys they had to play their guys a lot of minutes. Kyle Lowry only played 31 minutes, though, so he should be relatively fresh compared to some of the other guys. It'll be interesting to see how Gasol does, how Leonard does, because Leonard's had such a heavy workload this offseason, and he had that scheduled rest throughout the season. He doesn't get that in the postseason, so how does that affect him? And then how does Milwaukee respond to losing? How does Giannis come out and play after kind of being figured out a little bit in Game 3? Is Bledsoe able to turn it around? Do they maybe give Malcolm Brogdon a bigger role with the way he's playing? There's a lot of variables that Milwaukee could go to, but I think Budenholzer is going to be a bit conservative and kind of stay the same as he's gone throughout the postseason. And then if they lose, maybe you'll see more changes. But I think Toronto is in a spot where they can win this game. And if they're going to make this series, you know, go 6-7, try to win it, then they have to win tonight.
Yeah. I agree with you. The series hangs in the balance tonight. If Toronto wins, this is a series that could go it will go to at least six, obviously, but could have the potential to go seven. And then if they lose tonight, I don't see them getting out of Milwaukee down 3-1, and I would say that the series is over at that point. My prediction is Milwaukee's going to win. I think Giannis is going to have a better game. We've seen Giannis throughout this playoff kind of respond well to bad games. He's responded well each time. He responded in the Boston series, and I think he's going to respond again in this series. And so, but between that, and I think we'll get a better performance from Middleton. Bledsoe's been struggling throughout a significant portion of the playoffs, so I think he'll break out of the slump at some point. I don't want to make that prediction that it's coming soon, and I don't want to rely on that. But I think just the difference of Middleton and Giannis, they're two of their best players. I say Brogdon's their second best, but arguably their top two players, and Giannis and Middleton. I think them stepping up and having better games will lead to a Toronto victory.
Yeah, I mean, that would certainly help, because they both really struggled immensely in Game 3, and we obviously know the importance of those two, Giannis an MVP candidate, Middleton a fringe all-star level player. So they'll need to be better if Milwaukee's going to win tonight.
All right, man. Well, I'm looking forward to tonight's game. Aaron, thank you for coming on the podcast, man. Once again, this is Aaron Johnson, the co-founder of Palace of Pistons. He also does some writing for Def Pen Hoops and Clutch Point App. Aaron, do you got any work you want to plug? Go ahead and do that.
Well, if you want to check out our Pistons website, palaceofpistons.com, I'd greatly appreciate that. Myself and the rest of the team there working on some season reviews for the players on the team. We just had Andre Drummond's season review drop today. It was written greatly by Mike Anguiano. A great piece on him. We'll have scouting reports for the NBA draft coming out soon. And we also have the Palace of Pistons podcast, which you can find everywhere as well. And Chris has been, you know, part of the Pistons blog that he's worked with us before, and a great friend of mine. So I appreciate you, Chris, for having me on today. It's always great to talk basketball with you.
Hey, man, it's 100% mutual. And this offseason, man, you gotta find room for me on that Palace of Pistons podcast.
We will make it happen for sure. I mean, I remember our podcast years ago where we were talking about the Pistons and Andre Drummond. I still remember those podcasts to this day. Brandon Jennings. I mean,
oh man,
years and years ago, we go back to those kind of talks. So it's always great catching up with you, and I always enjoy our talks.
Yeah, man. I remember that discussion, man. We were having the discussion. Do you start Brandon Jennings after tearing the Achilles, or do you start Reggie Jackson? What a time.
What a time in Pistons history. How the times have changed.
My, how the times have changed. All right, Aaron, thank you for coming on, buddy. I appreciate you. You do great work when you're not on this podcast, but you also do great work on this podcast. So I greatly appreciate it, my friend, and we'll be talking soon.
Thank you, man.